Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to an expert talk from November 2018. Mr. Charles Ross, performance sportswear design consultant, presents Reducing Water Consumption.
I think we're going to kick off the last session of the day. He says optimistically. I'm just trying to get sound levels right at the moment. Other than working out, my slide goes down too far, so you can't really see the detail. Thank you for coming. Although we're on water consumption, the question which has come up more than any other question when I put it out to my network of contacts is smells. The anti-odor question. Does it work? How does it work? Is it worth it? Is it marketing? In the next 45 minutes, we're going to try and answer the question. Somehow, I've assembled a team of five people who know far more than me. And my main objective is to talk as little as possible and let you guys listen to the people who know more about the subject. And then, in the final part of the session, you get to ask them questions directly. So anything that we've not covered. The subject is reducing water consumption. I teach in this area, so I've put the question out to 50 people I know who work in design with their questions. There were other subjects that came up. You will hear about in the next 6 months, Unilever are launching Day 2, which is a refresh spray, which enables you to recondition your clothes to make them last for longer. The subject of top-loading washing machines for those American colleagues of mine, which take over 60 litres of water, came up. European ones are only 30 litres of water. But also, there's now a project going on at Rotherham, which is northern England, where they're using nylon beads to wash very, very effectively. And I know we're in the middle of Plasticgeddon, but this is a new method of washing which uses minimal water. And then, of course, they're sieving it out afterwards. But the thing that we really want to answer as a panel is can we reduce the need to wash our clothing lots and lots? Areas that we're not going to talk about, because hopefully they've been covered earlier today, the microplastics in water, or the Blue Planet 2 effect, the war on water. Up to now, most of our wars have been about oil. We're now fearing the next generation of conflict will be about water source. In California, there have been big debates about, is the state going to split into two? We know that something like cotton uses vast amounts of water. I'm wearing a cotton shirt. This is about 1,500 litres of water to get it onto my body before I start to wash it. I only consume about 1,500 litres of water a year. And we're seeing great moves within the dye industry, which is very water intensive, on something like denim, if I can make them all feel guilty because four of them are wearing jeans, of even vaster sums of water, the 7,000 litres of water it takes to get a pair of jeans into retail state. But the biocides which are in the dyes, there's now a very big question about should we be putting pollutants within our dyes. The biocides are in the dyes to try and reduce bacterial growth. Anyway, this is the bit where I stop talking. I've found a panel of five people who I've deliberately put out of order. But we have Carlo, who I think is top of the knowledge tree. We have Mats, who is very skilled in the communication message. The key point now is no matter what we do on design, communicating what we've done is as important. Elliot is not only a specifier of 37.5, what was previously known as Kokona, he manages a small brand, a very interesting brand that is starting to disrupt the English market. Gennady, in the middle, works for the company that knows more about wool than I've ever come across in my life. And when he heard that I was talking about smell reduction and water and all the rest of it, he just had a very simple one-liner, which is, why are we washing? but he will explain more. Ashley, right on the end, is a consumer-facing brand, a small brand in England, Outkit, a very good disrupting brand, but she has to daily face the problems of people who don't understand the technology. Me, I'm a part-time academic, and that's all you need to know about me. So what's going to happen? I've done all the waffling, setting the scenes. I've briefly introduced the panel. We're going to ask three questions. And when we're through that section, then it's your turn to pick on my panel and ask whatever you want. I'll host all the questions, then we'll work out who's going to answer them. So, Carlo, can I hand over to you to introduce yourself?
Thanks, Charles. So, quick introduction. I'm one of the two founders of HiQ. HiQ is a Swiss innovation and differentiation company. We work for the brands worldwide and create novel technologies that allow to bring functionality on textiles and the added value and the benefit to the consumer.
Thank you. And if we go on to Mats, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure.
Can you tell he's a communication specialist with the amount of words?
Well, I've read in a book somewhere that credibility is important, so I hope I got some of that across. But I'm the CMO of Polygiene. We see ourselves as a branding company, building an ingredient brand, making sure that things stay fresh, and with all the sort of benefits that has for the individual and the environment.
Thank you. And then on to Elliot.
Hello, I'm Elliot. I'm the managing director of Ashme. We are a performance cycling and running apparel brand, and the subject of anti-smell comes into our day quite often with the use of sportswear. It's a really hot topic, and we use 37.5 to combat that.
And on to the guy next to you, G, as
Hi,
we call him.
I'm Gennadit. I'm general manager of HD Wool. So we're an ingredient brand as well, and we manufacture and promote wool insulation, wool and other natural fibres. And the background to our company is a raw wool fibre supplier that operates globally. So Charles very kindly said that we are the experts in wool. We do know a lot about the wool fibre, and we've come from the very beginning of the supply chain upwards into this industry.
And finally, but I say most importantly, we have Ashley on the end.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I work for Outkit, who are an independent outdoor clothing and equipment brand. We sell direct to the consumer, online, worldwide, and through flagship stores in the UK. We started in 2004, and making customers' kit last longer is in our DNA, so we have repair stations that are accessible by all customers. We have a continuum project that redistributes kit that the customers no longer want. And also we have a foundation which aims to get everybody into the great outdoors.
Carlo, could I ask you to sum up the first question? Should we be talking silver? Should we be talking chemical? Should we be talking natural? Or should we actually not bother?
Well, I think most important is that we talk odor.
Okay.
And before talking about what solution, I think we should ask us, the consumers, is odor on textile relevant, yes or no? So we did that at HiQ, and we interviewed 200,000 people in the American market. And surprisingly, 75% of the consumers indicated that this is one of the most required technologies and effects and benefits that they are seeking from textiles. So if we ask ourselves, why did we get such a high rating, 75% of 200,000 people, that's enormous. I think the reason is that we're all social animals and we like to chit-chat together, but if we don't smell well, we don't feel like socializing. We don't feel like approaching each other, and we're missing out on a part of our life. So textiles and odors are definitely something that benefit the people if you can solve that, and if you can have a technology that addresses that and makes sure that textiles do not smell, and if they do, only nicely.
That makes sense to me, but if I ask Mats, who represents it from a slightly different angle,
I think that was a pretty good answer to me too, because to me saying what's best is a bit like, you know, what's the best technology in the world? It depends, yeah. Right? And I think that for starters, there's such immense gains if we can make people wash less, that the really important thing is that we make promises and then we keep them. What specific technology we use, of course, should have a much bigger upside to the environment than the downside, because there is always a trade-off. But as long as we keep doing that, we will have like a really big impact on everything. So I think it depends. I think the most important thing is never make promises we can't keep. That is the basic rule of any brand.
Thank you. If I was to say, Elliot, what's your reaction?
We use a combination of the treatments up here. We mm-hmm. Use a lot of natural fibers in our products. Mm-hmm. So a lot of merino wool, which is naturally anti-smell. Mm-hmm. But then we also mix that with 37.5. Our customers really appreciate that they don't have to wash their sportswear after everywhere, because it just means that they have to buy less kit. But it means that they don't have to go so long between athletic sessions. They can do 2 sessions a day in the same kit, and they're happy to do that. They can also wear their kit to work, commute into work, and then wear it at work as well, without having the smell properties that come with it. Yeah, we use a combination of the different treatments here that work really well for us.
Thank you. Kennedy, what's your reaction?
Yeah, well, there's people on this panel that are better qualified than me, for sure, to compare different treatments, mm-hmm. whether it's silver, whether it's chemicals. Obviously, our background is in natural fibre, and it's important to remember that not only wool, there's other natural fibres, but from a wool perspective, it has inherent odour inhibiting qualities without any treatments at all. So the way the makeup of the fibre and the way that it handles moisture doesn't allow bacteria growth, it doesn't allow odour. It's pretty widely accepted that if you wear wool socks or wool base layers, wool t-shirts, even if you do heavy activity in them, which I do myself, you don't have to throw it in the wash. Even if it's become saturated with sweat, you can hang it up to dry in the morning, it won't smell. So from our perspective, the less you wash, the better. And I think everybody would actually agree. It's not just about what is better between, you know, different kinds of treatments and different kind of fibres. If we want to make an impact, really, we should be all working together to reduce the amount of water that we're using and reduce the amount of washing that is done and laundering that is done unnecessarily. So but I think that's something we'll come on to later.
It is. And Ashley, would you like to wrap up on this first question?
I wouldn't quite say wrap up, Charles, but I would mirror what Elliot was saying about the effect for the consumers, especially kind of in the sportswear industry. At Alpkit, we chose to work with Polygene, and we found that the silver solution has been very effective for our customers who use their kit to a very high intensity. And we chose to do that partly because of the Blue Sign approval, partly because of the proven effectiveness, and partly because of the way Polygene had marketed the technology in a way that made sense to our customers, which is key for our communication.
Sound. I've almost got agreement. I tried to break up the panels so that I would have someone representing each, but this is not going to plan. I'm going to encourage them to start arguing.
I might take another twist at this and just when we talk about odors, mm-hmm. so what are odors that disturb? Yeah. And that's also an important thing. Yes, one odor is definitely if we are wearing synthetics and we have bacteria growing on synthetics, we get strong smell, yes. That's one type of odor. But there's many other odors on textiles that are an issue. And wool is a nice example. It's a natural material that has, through the water managing of the bacteria, but through the amine groups that are there, binding kitchen odors, binding odors that coming from hormones and other stuff. So it's a bit of a complex topic, and it's not only about managing bacteria. And if you say one technology or the other is better, silver is a very effective technology to manage bacteria, but it kills the bacteria, it doesn't manage the odors.
Okay.
So it's an indirect fix. So there's other technologies that try to come closer. What wool is great, but there is a lot of sport gear that is made out of polyester. So how can we learn, and this is what we try to do, learn from wool and create a technology that replicates that mechanism, but then on polyester or synthetics. And there's new ways how we can approach this complexity of odors with amino sugars, for example. We put that on the polyester textiles, and then we have, on the one side, not killing the bacteria, but taking the fats away that we put on the textile with our sweat, and on the other side, mineralizing the odors that come out of the sweat and deposit them on the fabric and then make them washable. So behave very similar to a wool, and you can learn from nature, from wool, and then create technologies to manage the same complexity that odors on textile represent.
Do you see what I mean by when we invite Carlo, everyone learns something new? Thank you, Carlo. I didn't realize from that side, but the biomimicry theme starting to come out. And before you all agree, I'm going to put you on to question two. Who would like to lead off with question two, which is there a downside to using these treatments? Would anyone like to? Matt's happily.
I think when it comes to this, I would like to start with the numbers that I do know when it comes to what comes off from washing. I was trying to sort of fix a number, and it's really difficult, but what I found for the UK, an average household releases about 10,000 liters of washing water full of detergent every year. We know that these detergents are really bad in so many ways for the environment. And this is a known fact, right? So we don't have to argue whether that is a probable or a possible thing. And the second one is that that also means about 600 kilos of carbon dioxide emissions, which is the equivalent of, you know, about one more airplane trip somewhere. And we know these things. And we also know that the average American citizen discards 32 kilos of textile every year. You know, this is what we're talking about on what we know is the downside. Now, what do we have to pay in terms of chemistry to get to an upside? Well, we use silver for one. The amount of silver is so minuscule that if you eat a plate of oysters, one dish, you actually get more than if you ate a polygene-treated shirt. So it's all about, I'm not saying that this is a zero imprint, because nothing is a zero imprint. But if we want to have progress, you know, we have to make electric cars. Electric cars don't have zero imprint, but it's a way better solution than just staying with fossil fuels. That's how I see the sort of trade-off, that it has to be a reasonable trade-off, it has to do the job for the consumer. And that, I think, is how we judge it, at least.
I think that's a brilliant answer. And I've got Sophie sitting in the audience. If you don't know Sophie, she's Don't Feed the Fish, who has educated us all to the amount of plastic in fish. Now I'm finding out about silver in my fish as well. Concerns are starting, but who would like to follow up on with Matt's? Anyone? Carlo.
Sure. I mean...
What's the downside of it?
The downside is always diligence in creating technologies. Okay. So when you create technologies, you have to consider what's the lifetime of the product and how can I minimize the amount of actives or technology that I put on that, and how can I make it last the longest possible? And how can I, when the lifetime is over, make sure what I put on can be recycled and can be reused and it's not causing any harm. So it's diligence in the development, and it's something that HiQ has at heart. So when we come up with a technology, we always try to maximize the wash fastness of it. And that has a lot to do with how do you construct it, what kind of film building do you have, how do you have the perfect application guidance for the producer so they will fix it correctly, they will make it durable, and you do get the best possible solution that has the least possible impact and the most possible benefits.
Now, on that subject, even I had to do some research because I don't know it all. And I'm going to lead on to Elliot here, but he's a user of 37.5 who are very original with their idea. They're putting their treatment in before the yarn is extruded, so it's permanently embedded within the fibre. So for durability, it works very well. But Elliot, don't let me steal your thunder.
Well, I mean, you've explained it really well there. So we try to avoid using the treatment so that we don't have the issues, which we're debating whether they are issues or not. We use a natural fibre as the base, so merino wool, which provides all of the properties that we require from a natural point of view. But then any enhancement treatments, like 37.5, we make sure that they're permanent treatments so that it doesn't wash off over time. So we're trying to increase the durability of the product as much as possible, whilst also giving the benefits of anti-smell, great wicking, great drying properties, which these natural fibres have. And so that's why we made that selection on those fabrics. And we use that extensively across our range. Anything that's next to the skin, we use the 37.5 and merino blends.
For those of you who don't know 37.5, it's volcanic ash and coconut husk, as opposed to the silver-based solutions we see. Gennady, would you like to add more?
Yeah, just a little. Obviously, it seems there's a there's a clear trade-off, as Mats was saying, between washing less and then the wash-off of the chemical. I don't know if any proper impact assessments have been done to compare the two and which way is better. It's not so much a problem for me because we don't apply the treatments in the first place, which is also a positive for natural fibres, which have those inherent qualities. You don't have to apply the treatment. So that portion of the manufacturing, that carbon footprint, isn't there. It's taken out. So that's also a benefit of the natural fibres. So, yeah, that's all really on the wash-off, because I'm not really sure how much comes off.
Gennady's in a really strong position because it's a keratin-based product. The biomimicry we've heard about is based on trying to copy keratin and its effect. But Ashley, do you want to add anything? You don't have to add anything, but what are the consumer worries?
I wouldn't say so much worry, but more maybe a lack of understanding that I think, as was said before, that detergent chemistry and wash method has a huge impact on any potential release from any the additives, and it can make it vary a huge amount. But the consumer doesn't know what's the best way to wash it, and a better explanation of that, or where it's clearer, would potentially minimise any release from these solutions.
So what I'm concluding is, what we're doing is more on the positive, but perhaps the customer's not understanding it enough, which leads me on to the third and final question. Remember, when we've done this question, the audience gets opened up to tackle us as much as we want. So, Mats, would you like to start off on the problem with communicating the message?
Yeah, I don't even know if there is much of a problem. You actually phrased the question a bit different.
Yes,
you asked
originally.
How do you sell an unseen benefit? And I got some examples of brands that are pretty good at selling an unseen benefit. And before I offend anybody, we better move on. But actually, I would say that what we do is very tangible. Actually, most brands, lifestyle brands, but it doesn't matter if you go from Apple to Zara, or, you know, they're all selling fairly intangible benefits from their brands. What we're selling, when you work with ingredient branding, the magic is, if we take the third one, is that if you look at past successes, it really is brands that have very straightforward and simple promises that tend to win. I mean, Gore-Tex guaranteed to keep you dry, or Bluetooth, like wireless communication within 10 meters. Visa, okay, you need a secure transaction almost like anywhere you are, and you can feel secure about it. Those are the promises, and when those promises are kept, you don't worry about the underlying technology, really, but you just know that this brand makes a promise and it keeps it every time and it adds value to whatever I see it on. So in a way, I think that it would be a misnomer to say that what we're doing with this is, so to say, a communication challenge, because I do think that we have like one of the most straightforward basic things. Everybody knows about body odor. Mm-hmm. Like Arlo said, what did you have? 75% said that?
200,000.
Yeah, of 200,000 people agreed that, you know, the body odor was something that reduced confidence, etc. So it's a known thing and it's a solution to a known problem. It's actually the most straightforward case, I would say, that you can almost imagine.
I don't like it. I try and create a panel who are going to disagree and we're going to have a bit of rebel going on. But I'm putting out a common theme. So who else would like to talk?
I rebelled against you, though.
You did, yes. Thank you. So if we go back to the question, who else would like to task with answering the question?
I can add to that. Yeah, I'll add to that, Charles. I think, obviously, the branding is very important. The messaging that we're giving to the consumer ourselves, ingredient brands, point of sale things, hang tags, that's all important. But that's not going to have the impact that's required to make real change. And if you take, for example, domestic recycling as an example, it's ingrained in people's minds now that you're recycling. You have your green bins and your grey bins and your blue bins and you put your bottles in one and your card in the other and your paper in the other. People just do that now. And we need that same sort of imprint ingrained on people when they're loading a washing machine. You know, do we really need to be loaded? Does this really need to go in the laundry basket? You know, does it really need to be washed? You know, and that's really difficult. And I don't know what the answer is, but recycling, that takes an effort at government level. So a lot bigger than anything that we can do individually, you know. So, yeah, branding is very important, and having hang tags, which say you don't need to wash me as much, is great, but hang tags get thrown away. Hang tags don't always get read and don't always get remembered. So I certainly think more needs to be done. And if there can be a concerted effort within the industry to reduce the amount of washing that's done, to educate the consumer, just to have it in the mind how much water is being wasted and the problems that that's going to cause for the world going forward in 20, 30, 40 years. You know, huge, what's the percentage, I think, in 30 years, something like?
Oh, we're up to 9.5 billion people.
Yeah.
So an extra 2 billion people consuming.
And something like 50% will have water shortages.
Machines. Yes, the water shortages, but also the more numbers of washing machines.
Yeah.
Because they're all moving into the middle class now. 1 billion more middle class coming from Asia in the next 15 years.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So it's a huge issue. And, you know, we've talked a lot in this industry about plastic pollution in the oceans, for example, in the last year. And that's a problem. But this is much, much bigger than anything like that. So that's all I'd add to.
Before we get too depressed, I'll move it on. Elliot, Carlo?
Yeah, from a brand level, the bit that we struggle with is that smell isn't sexy. It's it's not something that people really want to talk about, because without saying to somebody, smell this, doesn't it smell bad? Now smell us, it smells a lot better. It's not something that's easily put across. We've done a few things where athletes have worn our clothing for several days and weeks at a time on tours and said that the smell before and after was absolutely fine and they could still carry on wearing it. But to get that across to the consumer is quite a difficult challenge. And so that's what we need to work out and figure out is how do you get that across without kind of grossing people out?
Ashley,
if I can
Ashley, who is consumer facing, she heads the customer service team at Outkit.
So I think we can sell no odour. I think we can make that tangible. It's something that, having worn a no odour top for a while, you can tell. But that's not the only reason why consumers are laundering. They're also doing it, from what I can see, for perceived hygiene reasons, which is more of a social construct. And if you want to challenge that social norm, it has to become more disgusting to wash your clothes so often it's unenvironmental than it is disgusting to not wash your underwear. And until people have that distinction, it's hard to change that behaviour.
Good point. Carlo, could I ask you to summarise to this question, please?
Sure. Communication, branding of technology to consumers is an art.
Mm-hmm.
It is really something where you have to do thorough homework to be able to capture the very short attention span that the consumer is spending with the technology and the benefit it will give him. And if you're not super sharp in these 2, 3, 4 seconds that you have to make an impact, you will not carry the message through. So what we've done at HiQ, we've created as a company creating technologies for textiles, we've invested in marketing. We've brought people from Unilever into the company for branding. We've brought people from online marketing into the company. So we have a dedicated marketing team that goes out, asks the consumers in Japan, in the US, in Europe, with polls, what do you think about order control? What resounds with you? Which words do we have to use to make you understand the benefit quickly? And once we have done that exercise, that we know what works and validated it, then we need to bring it to the consumer. And then we're a small company, we're 80 people, we can't carry the world. So we have to work together as a team. We have to work with our brand partners. We have to convince them that the communication material, that the marketing material that we have created will give them an added value, will allow them to talk to their consumer, carry the argument, and then make the difference at the point of sales and after the point of sales, so the consumer has this positive experience, he experiences a technology that works, he has read about it, the message was right and tailored, and then you have a chance to bring communication through and make ingredient branding successful.
So what I'm starting to get from the panel is we actually need to generate a little bit of disruption and possibly working as an industry as a whole in the same direction. But I want to let actually Matt sum up, because he's that much better at communication than me.
I actually wanted to add something, which I think is also an important thing to understand about this thing about cultural norms. I bet that every single one of you grew up with two norms. You shower every day, and every day that you've worn something, you just put it in the dirty pile, right? This is the way we were brought up. If we're going to get a completely new set of behavior around this, frankly, it's not going to be a direct communication that is going to do that trick. It simply doesn't work that way. What we need to do is to get garments that stay fresh to the consumers, and when they have the experience themselves, they figure this out gradually, almost like a little shameful thing, you know, like, wait a minute, I can actually wear these socks again. You know, laziness will work in our favor here. So they will try and they will start experimenting a little bit, go to the second workout in the same, they will start pressing the boundaries. Here's where I think is so important. Never let down on the promise, because if we let them down on the promise that it didn't stay fresh, that it didn't, you know, do what we promised them, they will stop changing their behavior. And if we lose this, we will all lose. We will lose environmentally, it will be commoditization and everything. So I think it's very important to see that the first task is always like, feel free to be aggressive. Make a real strong promise in front of the consumer. Make them try this stuff, because we can't just go out and tell them, you know, wear more, wash less, because that will be like, but that's kind of a yucky thought, you know? They have to experience it in various ways with the various technologies, but we got to make sure that in every context we do this, it works in that context as promised. If we do that, gradually this becomes an environmental story, and it will become known that, you know, people are starting to wash less. This is wonderful for the planet, etc. And then we all end up winners. So I think that it's important to sort of see what message goes where, and that's also something that we take very seriously. Thanks.
So I'm actually rather disappointed. I did form this panel of people from different organizations so they wouldn't agree, but I think there's a reasonably unified message, which just leads me to say that what I want to do is to hand it over to the audience and say, look, please challenge the panel. Not too hard, but are there any questions that we've left unanswered at this stage?
Hello. I'm from New York, from a company called Active Cashmere, mm-hmm. and I listened to the wonderful panel, mm-hmm. and what an amazing venue. Coming from Cashmere to this venue mm-hmm. is unbelievable. But I think observation I see here is that everything in life has shelf life. And then if you're trying to manage that, and companies like HEIQ, which we would love to work with, your company is all amazing, but its sustainability is about a marathon, not a sprint. So I see assets, how they're trying to preserve the shelf life of the product. Okay. Just an observation, open for it.
I think that's a very good observation. I do a lot of work with RAP in the UK, and we talk about durability or product life period being measured one of three ways. Physical durability, which is what the sports industry's grown up in, is one method. We also have emotional durability, which is how long you love the garment for, how long till you're tempted to flirt with some other garment instead. And you also have fit durability, which is as you grow older, things go south, they don't fit. But if I turn to my audience, we've heard a very good point about it's the relationship you have with the garment. Would any of you like to comment on it? Or Matt, happily.
I mean, one thing I thought about was that staggering figure of 32 kilos per American in just discarded textile. So what do we have here? I mean, if you would wash garments, let's say a third less, mm-hmm. you would prolong the life, of course, but you also have a secondary effect that I think is interesting. We have increasing trends of secondhand markets for clothes and people switching and stuff like that. That, of course, requires odor-free garments. But another thing is that if you actually wash them less, they will, of course, lose less of the... You will keep the color better. It will wrinkle less. It will just basically be a better garment to sort of trade. So a third less washing could mean that, you know, you have an even bigger impact on how many garments that would still be kept in circulation. And I think that is a big impact. Even if we would all still have sort of fashion victims that always want the latest stuff, if we can prolong the life of every garment and that it's a normal thing that it has several owners, etc., I think that is where we could get a lot of benefit.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to embarrass Gennady on this one. Gennady, we know, is a wool specialist, keratin. And the research which is coming out at the moment through the microplastic situation is we're not finding wool microfilaments at sewage outflow pipes. Now, we know it's coming off the garments when you wash it, but you're washing it in soap. But when that wastewater hits the sewage system, it's mixing with excess detergent gunk. And within the 2 weeks it takes for water to pass through the filtration plant, wool is dissolving. So all of those who think that detergent, yeah, of course it's safe, it's fine. The evidence is that it's eating the wool. So that gives you some degree about how aggressive detergents can be. And in the UK, we now have detergent additives as well, just to give you a more shocking version of it. But would any of you like to add to what's already been said on this? You don't have to.
I just add to what you said, Charles. It's the biological detergents, which contain enzymes, which are the ones that attack wool fibre and basically dissolve it. So non-biological detergents that don't have those enzymes, they don't break down the wool. So obviously, when those wool fibres get into the sewage system, you can't control what it's come into contact with. And that's what the research seems to be showing at this stage. I just wanted to add that little point, sorry.
He knows the detail. I like this. Are we happy with what the panel said?
I would like to invite the panel, if they'd like to look under at cashmere.org, is an association for industrial production out of China, imagine, that wants to preserve the environment because the goats are actually eating the grass and desertification is the major issue, which leads to drought, which leads back to water. Okay. So
Curious. Can I invite another question? Or have we stunned the audience? Have you been worn out by performance days? Before I start to pick on people, Alex, can I ask for any questions or are we happy? You have your opportunity to ask people who know lots. If that's the situation, these lot are going to be really happy because they were terrified of the questions that could have come about it. Can I ask you please to show a mark of appreciation for the group we've put together?
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other expert talks, go to www.performancedays.com. Copyright November 2018 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.